All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. You know, contracts, they can get pretty messy sometimes. And that's exactly where we're headed today, deep into the nitty-gritty of a case that just screams UCC.
Oh yeah, this one's a classic. A real nail biter that still has a lot to teach us, even all these years later.
I'm talking about Orange and Rockland Utilities v. Emirata Hess Corp, a case that really anyone who's ever dealt with requirements contracts needs to know about.
You got that right. This case, it's like the poster child for understanding what happens when those contracts get put to the test when the market goes haywire.
So let's just jump right in. 1969, picture it. Peace signs, platform shoes, and Orange and Rockland Utilities, O&R for short. They decide to make a deal with Emirata Hess for fuel oil. 5 years, fixed price, pretty standard stuff.
Pretty standard, sure, except for one little detail that turned out to be a pretty big deal.
Yes, the devil is in the details, as they say. So the contract, it had these estimates, right? How much oil O&R thought they'd need each year. But, and this is the kicker, there was this clause in there that said O&R, they could demand unlimited amounts if they ended up needing more.
Yeah, that kind of flexibility, it's not unusual in these long-term agreements, especially when you're dealing with something like fuel, where needs can fluctuate. But the thing is, at the time, O&R, their primary fuel source, it wasn't even oil, it was natural gas. Fuel oil was more like their backup plan.
Right, so nobody was really expecting them to suddenly need a whole lot more of it, but then just a few months later, boom.
Oil prices, they just went through the roof, doubled, just like that. And suddenly that little clause about unlimited amounts, well, didn't seem so little anymore.
You're telling me? O&R's demand for oil, it just exploded. We're talking increases of over 60% in some years compared to what they originally estimated. Over 500,000 extra barrels. Hess, they were probably scratching their heads like, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah, and here's the thing. It wasn't just that O&R suddenly needed a ton more energy. They were actually switching away from natural gas, their main fuel. And they started selling all this extra cheap oil they were getting from Hess to other utilities, making a pretty sweet profit, I might add.
Ah, so they saw an opportunity and they went for it. But, I mean, you can't blame Hess for being a little upset, right? They were suddenly on the hook for way more oil than they bargained for, all at that old low price.
No, you can't blame them at all. So what did Hess do? They said, nope, not going to happen, and refused to deliver all that extra oil. And that, my friend, is how we end up in court.
Cue the dramatic music. This is where things get really interesting. We've got a classic contract dispute on our hands. And to figure it out, we got to turn to the UCC, specifically Section 2306, the section that deals with those tricky requirements contracts.
Right, because the big question here is, did O&R actually act in good faith when they jacked up their demands like that? And even if they did, were those demands just completely out of line, unreasonably disproportionate, the UCC puts it, to what was originally agreed upon?
Okay, so help me out here. This Section 2306, what's it all about? What's it trying to do?
Well, think of it like this. It's trying to walk a fine line. On the one hand, it recognizes that these requirements, contracts, they got to be flexible. Businesses, they can't always predict exactly what they'll need down the road. But on the other hand, it also wants to be fair to both sides. You can't have one party taking advantage of the other just because the market takes a wild turn.
Makes sense. So how did the court apply this to the whole O&R and Hess situation? How did they decide if O&R was playing fair?
Well, they really dove deep. They didn't just look at the numbers. They looked at O&R's internal memos, the whole picture. And what they found was pretty damning. O&R, they weren't even trying to hide the fact that they were using this contract to cash in on those low oil prices. It was all right there in black and white.
So the court's saying you can't just turn a contract for your own needs into a profit-making scheme, especially when you're basically betting on a market shift that nobody could have really predicted. That's not exactly what we'd call good faith.
Exactly. The court, they were pretty clear about that. Good faith in this context, it means you got to be honest, sure. But it also means you got to play by the rules. You got to act in a way that's commercially reasonable.
Yeah.
And O&R, with this massive demand increase solely for resale, well, they were definitely pushing the boundaries of what's considered acceptable.
Right. So even if you argue they were technically allowed to demand more, they weren't really playing by the spirit of the agreement. And that brings us to the second big issue. Were those demands just way too high?
Yeah, that's where the unreasonably disproportionate part comes in. And the court, they didn't just say, oh, well, they asked for twice as much, so it must be unreasonable. They went deeper. They looked at what Hess could have reasonably expected back when they signed the deal. Remember, O&R at the time, they were all about natural gas. has had no reason to think they'd suddenly become this oil-selling powerhouse.
So it's all about context, right? Not just the raw numbers, but the whole situation.
Exactly. And the court also considered the fact that this oil price spike was like a freak occurrence. Nobody could have seen it coming. It's not like Hess should have factored in the possibility of O&R becoming oil barons overnight.
It's starting to sound like the court was using a kind of, I don't know, a mental checklist to figure all this out.
You know, you're right. It wasn't explicitly laid out in the decision, but legal scholars, they've kind of pieced together what seems like a five-factor test the court used to analyze this whole unreasonably disproportionate thing. First, there's the sheer size of the increase, which, as we know, was huge. Second, could Hess have seen this coming? Nope, not with O&R's sudden shift to oil dealing. Third, how big was the difference between the contract price and the market price? Well, huge again, which made reselling very tempting. Fourth, was this price spike something predictable? Nah, more like a bolt from the blue. And finally, what was driving the increased demand? Was it a legitimate need for O&R, or was it, you know, profit? And we know the answer to that one.
Five factors. Five strikes against O&R, it seems. It wasn't just one thing that did them in, it was the whole package. So what was the court's final verdict?
Well, the trial court, they sided with Hess, and the appellate court, they backed that up. O&R, they lost. The message was clear. You can't use a requirements contract to game the system, to take advantage of unexpected market swings, especially when you're straying so far from what everyone originally agreed upon.
And there is that one line from the court's decision that really stuck with me. Something about O&R using the contract to become a big-time power seller to other utilities.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. They said, and I'm quoting here, O&R's use of the contract to propel itself into the position of a large seller of power to other utilities evidences a lack of good faith.
Yeah.
Boom. Mic drop moment right there.
That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? They tried to pull a fast one and the court wasn't having it. So let's bring it all home for our listeners. Why should law students care about this case? What are the big takeaways from Orange and Rockland v. Emirata Hess?
Well, first off, this case shows that good faith, it's not just some fluffy legal concept. It has real teeth. Courts will absolutely step in and say, hey, you're not acting fairly here, especially when someone's trying to exploit a contract for a quick buck.
So even if the contract lets you demand more, you still got to be reasonable about it.
Exactly. And second, when we talk about unreasonably disproportionate demands, we got to look at the whole picture. It's not just about the numbers. It's about what was foreseeable, what the original intentions were, what's commercially acceptable behavior.
So basically, a requirements contract, it's there to cover your genuine needs, not to let you play the market like a Wall Street hotshot.
You got it. And lastly, this case, it highlights just how important it is to be super clear in those contracts, to define what the buyer's needs actually are, what everyone's expecting, to avoid these kinds of messy disputes down the road. Because flexibility in a contract, it has its limits.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. Orange and Rockland v. Emirata Hess, a case that keeps on giving even decades later.
Absolutely. It's like a roadmap for anyone dealing with requirements, contracts, and those tricky questions of good faith and what's reasonable.
And on that note, here's something for everyone to ponder. What if O&R's increased demand wasn't about reselling oil? What if it was because their own energy consumption went way up, maybe because of a crazy heat wave or some other unexpected event? Would that change things? Would the court have seen it differently? Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.